listening to the Actionable Marketing Podcast, powered by CoSchedule, the only way to organize your marketing in one place, helping marketers stay focused, deliver projects on time, and keep their entire marketing team happy.
It was the early 2000s. I was in graduate school at North Dakota State University, and I was studying organizational communication. And I ran across this term. It was strategic ambiguity. Oh, I loved it. The definition is, it's the art of making a claim using language that avoids specifics, right? So I could purposely be vague to derive personal or organizational benefit. It was beautiful. You can see politicians using this. You can see marketers using this all the time. But as I realized, there was the other side of the coin to strategic ambiguity, and that was creating this environment where, companies and employees were trying to avoid blame, using it to create a cover your ass type of work environment. And it shouldn't be that way. It costs organizations millions of dollars. It provides tons of cloudiness around marketing initiatives and goals. And it's just not a great thing when it comes to marketing execution. So my next guest, through all of her global consulting projects, she's a keynote speaker and she's worked with thousands of leaders. Her name is Karen Martin. She's president at TKMG and the author of Clarity First. And she has seen firsthand how this pervasive lack of clarity just is strangling business performance of marketing teams and leadership, right? So how to remove ambiguity and achieve clarity first. It's a fantastic episode. Karen provides tons of methods and insight for achieving clarity and unleashing potential in yourself and in your teams. She shows us how to identify and communicate the organization's true purpose. What is your mission statement? What are your marketing goals? How do you set achievable priorities? How do you deliver great customer value through a more efficient process? And how do you define tangible marketing goals and create KPIs for measuring them? It's a really good, good episode that really gets at the process that we all do and holding ourselves accountable to performance. My name is Eric Piela. I'm the host of the Actionable Marketing Podcast and the Brand and Buzz Manager here at CoSchedule. It is another action-packed episode. Can't wait to introduce you to Karen. Buckle up, because it is time to get amped. All right, marketers, welcome to another episode of the Actionable Marketing Podcast. And I am joined today by our guest. Her name is Karen Martin. She is the president at TKMG and the author of Clarity First. Karen, welcome to the show.
Hi, Eric. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Yeah, I'm glad you could be here. I'm super excited to talk about this book. I know you've got a lot of leadership, a lot of entrepreneur and marketing background that you're going to share with our listenership today. So I'm pretty pumped. This is exciting. So Clarity First, tell us about, where was the passion to create this book? Where did it come from? I always found authors are really passionate about, if you're going to go ahead and write a 300, 400 to 500 page book, you usually are really passionate about the topic. So what led you to this book, Karen? And maybe just let our listeners know a little bit about your background as well.
Okay. Well, I think I was actually born to seek and tell the truth. And that is something I discovered very late in life, or very late in my career, I guess I should say. But the impetus for this particular book came when I wrote The Outstanding Organization back in 2012. Clarity was one of the four foundational practices or conditions that I discovered organizations needed to have outstanding performance. And yet they were always a bit lacking in those four areas. And clarity got the most attention and the most emotion shared by readers that were reading that chapter. So I thought there's something to this, and I wanted more real estate, to explore clarity more deeply. And that's why I wrote an entire book on it. But it wasn't an easy book to write, I have to say.
The first one was, but this one was, what made it so difficult then?
I didn't realize until I got deep into clarity how dang difficult clarity is, and how there are many components of Clarity. So it seemed like, oh, it's a single subject book. It's going to be super easy to write. It wasn't. It was quite a little monster.
I love it's kind of, I call my children little monsters sometime too. So you love them, but boy, they're a lot of work. Well, let's dig into that a little bit. Let's peel this onion if you can, Karen, because I think about Clarity, right? There's kind of the traditional definition of Clarity, but if you could maybe elaborate on that, is it the same as transparency? Is Clarity the same as certainty? What kind of definition do you use in this book?
Well, I the simplest definition is, you know, the state of something being easily and accurately understood. So there shouldn't be a lot of effort in understanding what information is being relayed or conveyed, and there shouldn't be anything inaccurate about it. So it's easy and accurate. However, it is very, very close to transparency. You need to be clear if you're attempting to work with transparency and convey information with transparency. It is not the same thing as certainty. That's an interesting thing I discovered that I hadn't really considered, that, you know, you can be certain about something and be actually pretty unclear, because certainty comes from a place of ego. And so they're related, but they're not the exact same thing.
Interesting. So I have to imagine putting in the labor of love into this book, there's obviously there must be a problem existing, you know, right, in I think our organizational cultures and the way we do business. I know one of the stats you have, like, you know, it's costing, you know, companies and educational institutions and government agencies, et cetera, billions of dollars a year because we're not getting, is it the clarity that we need to achieve outstanding performance, or is it a way in which we're communicating, or is it a process-driven thing, Karen?
Good question. So it's actually both the way we are conveying information ourselves and the way we're receiving information. So when you look at an organization, there's a pretty common level of ambiguity, which is the opposite of clarity, in how people communicate purposes of meetings, or they don't communicate a purpose at all, how customer requirements come into an organization, how an organization is actually performing. And in the marketing area in particular, most of the time, there's a kind of a fog over how the organization is really performing and what's actually appealing to a customer. You know, the data is getting a little bit better, but there's still an awful lot of organizations. The smaller the organization, the more prevalent this is, that really don't know what customers are responding to. And that makes for poorer decisions. It can make for wasted money, spending money developing a product that customers don't want. You know, it has all kinds of tentacles that cause poorer performance than an organization could have otherwise.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I think, you know, without clarity, there's assumptions being made, there's guesstimates being made. And I think that goes, you know, as marketers listening on the call, for how we think our audiences will receive, you know, our products, our services, our brands, how they'll perceive and interpret our marketing messages and creatives and copy and all that stuff. But also, I think internally, right? Like, we all work on marketing teams. We're collaborating with other marketing professionals or business leaders or stakeholders or partners, whatever your business model is. And I think ambiguity can be a huge danger there. And I have to imagine, like, I've been on both ends where I felt like maybe I've tried to provide what, and I don't know if this is a real term, but I kind of call it strategic ambiguity, right? You've provided enough information to feel like you've given yourself a little bit of wiggle room to sneak out of the situation, right? Which is almost like a scapegoat for yourself. And I think I've been guilty of that myself. Do you see that happening? Do you see, you know, are people scared of clarity, or is it they're just not fully thinking through that I might not be providing the clarity needed?
Well, I discovered that there were several different primary reasons for the lack of clarity, but they actually all boil down to one thing, and that is fear, what you just mentioned. And, you know, when you're an information provider, there's the fear that if you are crystal clear about something, then you're held accountable for it. And, you know, there's a little bit of that, well, like you're mentioning wiggle room, and, you know, when you build in wiggle room, then that makes it so that you don't necessarily have to deliver exactly what someone said. When the more precise you are, the more you're held, you know, to a certain bar, or the bar is raised and you're held accountable for that work. And so if you have wiggle room, you don't. As an information recipient, same deal. If you get information, oftentimes it is unclear and people are afraid to ask for clarification because either they've been punished in the past for that, or you know, they don't want to sound stupid or whatever it might be. But every time you do that, you sell a little bit of yourself away, because without that crystal clear information, you don't know necessarily what the person's asking for or how to deliver. And then you can get yourself into all kinds of problems, not delivering what the recipient or what the questioner was asking you to deliver.
Yeah. And I've been on the receiving end of that, right? Where I think everyone can put themselves in that place where, you know, the marketing director has said, hey, I need this done. And you're like, yeah, I think I know what she means. And, you know, mm-hmm. but you don't want to ask for that clarity. You don't, you know, like maybe it was the second time they told you and now you feel like a fool. But then, right, what are the ramifications of not getting that clarity, and how does it trickle down? And then it goes back to that dollar, time, energy that ends up being wasted. So, you know, why is it then so important for employees to feel like they have that clarity? I got to imagine it makes people feel like they have the right expectations. They know how to deliver on their work. But could you elaborate on that piece as well, Karen?
Yeah, sure. The very fundamental area has to do with actual productivity. When you have to sit and figure things out, or you have to, you know, wonder if it means this versus that, that takes time away from actually doing work and delivering value to customers. So that's the first thing. It's a bit of a time suck. It's often very frustrating to not understand what someone actually means. And so we're starting to see a bit of a tie between the level of ambiguity in an organization and the level of engagement that's got with their employees versus not. And so, you know, while crystal clear communication can sometimes be hard to hear, it does make for a much more efficient, you know, way of getting work done, because you don't have to guess about things. And then the last thing is confidence. You know, when you're given clear instruction, and when you're giving clear instruction, and you've checked to make sure that what you think is clear to the recipient, it just makes everyone more confident in what they have to do the work. And that confidence feels real good. And lack of confidence doesn't feel good at all. So it makes for more productive and better quality results as a result.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And I definitely can visualize that, even those three components, even when I think about creating a marketing campaign and developing messaging and setting goals and making sure that the entire team has clarity on exactly what it is we're looking to accomplish with these efforts and exactly how we're going to get there. And again, where there's not clarity is where I think there's a lot of thrashing. There's a lot of, you know, I think a lot of lost time, a lot of inefficiencies that happen in a process. Now, you do a really clever thing which all great authors do, is you found a way to really kind of package up a lot of your main points and what you kind of call your five P's to kind of make it really digestible for the reader. Could you kind of talk through each of those P's for me?
Sure. So it's being crystal clear about the purpose and purpose of everything, purpose from why the organization exists all the way to the purpose of a meeting or a phone call or an email. That's the first P. The second P is priorities. What are the agreed upon priorities of a work team, an organization, so that everyone is working toward the same true north, as we call it, the same direction? So crystal clear on those priorities. The next one is performance. So I'm sorry, process. Process comes first. So process, how specifically do you get your work done so that you get more predictable quality results at the end of it? And then linked to that, performance. How are those processes actually performing? What are the measurables that you use to determine whether you're being successful or less successful in whatever the work might be, whether it's a marketing campaign or it's market share or it's, you know, the actual customer service part of products that are being offered? And then the last one is problem solving. So once you know how you're performing, it may be you're not performing at the level you'd like to be, and that's a gap between where you are and where you'd like or need to be. And that's what we call a problem to be solved. And so being clear about what the problem is and what that gap is and why you need to close it is very helpful. And oftentimes people kind of fumble around in problem solving, not really even understanding what the problem is to begin with.
Well, hey there, I hope you're enjoying this episode of the Actionable Marketing Podcast. While we take a breather, I have a quick favor to ask. If you love this show, if you're enjoying the guests that we bring on, I would truly appreciate a rating and review on iTunes. And you know what? Before you hit submit, if you take a screenshot of your rating and review, if you send that to me via email at podcast@coschedule.com, as a sign of my appreciation, I will hook you up with a really cool Co-Schedule swag pack, just to say thank you. All right, let's get back to our show and our interview with Karen Martin. That's fantastic. I love that taxonomy, Karen, because as you talk through it and as I read it in the book, I can definitely see the universal application of those five processes, right? Of those five steps, I should say. I look at our marketing efforts here, Co-Schedule, I can definitely see us breaking down, right, that purpose. I can see us breaking down the priorities. So our goal, our goals? How are we going to reach them? What's the process or our strategies in place to get them? You know, our performance, how are we evaluating achieving those goals? What are our KPIs and our ROI, right? And then finally, the problem-solving piece, which has got to be we didn't achieve those results we wanted to. How do we iterate and make them better? So really, really cool. And I love the idea of stop, methodically look at each of those five different components and really make sure you've got clarity at each of those. So let's make this a little bit more tangible for our listeners, if you could, Karen. Is there an example potentially where, you know, leaders have done a good job of communicating, you know, these five P's, or are there ways that you've seen organizations implement this that maybe a listener today could kind of, I wouldn't say necessarily emulate, but at least listen to and figure out and make sure it's unique to their company when they roll it out?
Yes. So I was fortunate in having two corporate experiences early in my career where we had stellar CEOs that happened to be well wired, you know, to do this kind of work and to speak with clarity. And we were very clear in both cases of what our priorities were and how we were performing and what we were supposed to be working on and all of that. What I find most helpful, no matter what the size of the organization is, and it can even be a subset within an organization, a work team, for example, is, you know, really brainstorming on what all the priorities are that you could be working on, and then decide the relevant few that you're going to work on at one time, and you hold all those others at bay, because we tend to juggle too much and we can't get it done as effectively and efficiently as we would otherwise be able to when we're juggling too much. So getting, you know, just having a conversation of what are all the possible things we could be working on, and then get consensus around what are we going to work on in what sequence, and limit how many things you're working on at any given time. You'll get more done per unit of time by limiting how many items you work on at one time, projects or whatever. And then you'll have, you know, sometimes 30%, 40% more work accomplished in the course of a year, for example, by operating that way.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, that's with priorities. I think that's a very good way to go. On the KPIs, the key performance indicators, it's again important not to be measuring every single thing and having everyone have to think about every single thing, but rather pick the relevant few KPIs or metrics that you can use to determine how healthy you are as a work team or organization, and monitor those visually. So they need to be up on a board. Even in a dispersed workforce with a bunch of computers and people all over the place, there needs to be something like on the homepage, for example, that shows those KPIs so that they're top of mind and people are watching them. And then you're also talking about them in meetings to start identifying those gaps and start problem solving. So the visual look of KPIs so that everyone can see them is critical. They can't be buried in a computer and you can't just talk about them. They have to be visual. So that's another really big one.
That is really good advice. And I definitely, that's something that we've tried to embrace here at Co-Schedule for sure. This book was actually recommended to me by a friend and fellow marketer. And one of the things that really popped out at me was this statement that profit is not your purpose. And I think it's really, you know, as marketers, we get super eager when we see the number of, you know, we're measuring our success by, you know, profit indicators, and if not net revenue gained, right, from our efforts. But I think that's good to have that motivation. But I think I love that you talk about that can't be your purpose. Could you expand a little bit more on that?
Yes, I would love to. Thank you for asking, because I'm very passionate about this. Profit is an outcome. It has always been an outcome. It will always be an outcome. It's an outcome of delivering high value to customers. And the purpose of why you're doing that is to solve a customer problem. So a customer has a problem, the what that you provide, whether it's a good or a service, that is solving that problem. The most important part of purpose is getting down even deeper into why you're solving that particular problem and not another problem for the customer. And there's always something emotional the customer gains from the product, whether it's, you know, feeling better about oneself, whether it's being safer in life, whether it's, you know, being having a nice full belly that feels good of great food. You know, whatever it is, there's a emotional connection to every single product. And most organizations don't make that tie, or they don't make it consistently enough that everyone is keeping that top of mind. This is why we're doing what we're doing.
Yeah, I like that. You also, really cool, you kind of talk about, you know, the chapter on you. You know, we're talking about organizational clarity begins with you. So I think there's this ownership that it's really easy to point fingers at people, you know, that aren't providing you the clarity. But is there ownership in what you can control and what you can do to make sure that you, or at least adding to a positive side of the equation?
Yeah, so I classify people into clarity avoiders and clarity pursuers as far as their active engagement with information. And then there's clarity blind, which is a different group that are just not aware of the value of having clarity and operating with clarity. And they aren't even aware that whether they have it or they don't have it, they're just not aware. And we fluctuate within different circumstances. So for example, you could be a clarity pursuer at work and be a clarity avoider at home. Or you could be a clarity pursuer at work about this one aspect of work and a clarity avoider about another aspect of work. So we, you know, we're shades of all three of these different categories, but most people are primarily avoiders, pursuers, or blind. And the book, part of the book's purpose, Clarity First, is to help people start recognizing where are they. And I have an online quiz that people can take that's at clarityfirstquiz.com. That's a free quiz just to help people be able to start sensing, you know, maybe I am operating with a little bit of fear, a little too much fear. Maybe I should be doing something about that and asking for clarification more than I do. And things like that. It's subtle, it's deep. It's psychological, but it really makes a difference in how productive and how successful we can all be.
So I think, you know, I'm smiling because I'm laughing at, you know, the different ways in which you kind of approach clarity, depending on if it's your personal life or you're in your office or if it's a different project. I can definitely see myself, you know, when I'm really engaged on clarity and when I'm, you know, maybe not necessarily as focused on it. And I think we all kind of struggle with that. And there are certain ramifications, as you've outlined, if we don't find that clarity, where we're going to hold ourselves back and our organization back. Now, if we've established, if anything, I feel like, Karen, we've established the need for finding clarity, seeking clarity, the benefit statements and value prop is there. But where do we begin? Like if I'm a listener, I'm figuring out, okay, I want to start getting focused around clarity. You talk about maybe some three questions, especially when it's around, you know, finding your purpose. We've talked about purpose in the past. What are those three questions?
Yeah. So from an organization perspective, the first question is, what do you do? And that's always the easiest one to answer. It's the product. You know, so what is the product that you deliver, whether it's a good or a service? The next question is, what do you really do? And that gets back into solving that customer problem. So and this is where you have to get very precise. What specific problem or problems are you solving for the customer that your product is able to do perhaps better than another product, and getting very clear about that differentiation? The last question, which is the toughest one, is why that why that product and not something else? Why did you choose that problem to solve and not something else as an organization? Sometimes for older organizations, you have to go all the way back to the founders, you know, that were decades and decades ago about why they started the business. For some of your listeners, they may be very new business owners, and that why they choose that particular problem to solve is probably more top of mind because it's more recent. And getting clear about the emotional benefit that your product provides to a customer, that is where you get your employees tied to the singular vision of what you're trying to achieve as an organization. And where, frankly, it's more fun to come to work every day because you're solving people's problems in a profound way. It feels good.
It does feel good. I definitely get that. And that's a great place to start and a good exercise that I know all of our listeners can go through to kind of find those real answers. I love that. What do you really do here? It's a good question. I know you've talked about Clarity First a number of times, Karen, on different podcasts and shows, and it's probably been a little bit since the book first launched. What is something that you've seen maybe just recently, whether it's a new piece of research or a new iteration with Clarity First, or maybe even an application as you do consulting, where you've really seen Clarity First to make an impact on an organization?
You know, it never fails to surprise me when you get a group of people together, whether it's top leaders or front lines or middle managers, and they start talking about any one thing, how different everyone's perspective is about that one thing.
Ah, sure.
And how typically there's not one understanding of why work is not feeling as good or you know, why it's not being achieved in a way that it needs to. And it takes being very safe, a safe space, and being honest about what's going on with the work. And so I'm, you know, getting more and more intrigued with how to create a fearless workplace and how to get people feeling comfortable shining a light on problems or, you know, gaps between where you are and where you want to be, and how to have what might be otherwise considered difficult conversations about how different work teams are working together or not working together. And, you know, just I'm always calling out the elephant in the room. And when you do it with a safe, you know, kind of environment and you, you know, ask people to feel comfortable, people actually do start talking. And it's so healing. This is what I love about this work. It heals relationships in a way that they hardly ever get unraveled again, because they finally have a point of commonality, because they're finally clear on what, you know, it that they're talking about actually is. And it just is wonderful to see that lack of understanding was what was causing strife to begin with. And then once you're clear about everything from how you do work to why you're doing it to, you know, what the customers really think and all of that, this tension that you often see just melts away. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's fun to hear that. It's nice to know that there are success stories out there and that you get to be a part of those. I'm sure it's really rewarding. And I love that there are listeners and myself going, like, I'm looking for that aha moment, right? I think we all deal with dissonance and lack of clarity. And if there are, it sounds like there's, you know, we're at the part in the podcast here where I know you would have some suggestions on where our listeners can go to learn more about Clarity First. You talked about that free quiz you have. So if you can just refresh us where they can go to learn about that. And then if they want to pick up a copy, where's the best place to go?
Sure. ClarityFirstQuiz.com is where the free quiz is that I mentioned, the assessment. And it assesses both organizational and individual relationship with clarity. And then the book is available at ClarityFirstBook.com or our website, TKMG.com. And I've in the past have given a lot of free webinars, and those are all available on the website as well. And there's 5 webinars about Clarity and Clarity First that are the newer ones on there. And I'm going to start giving webinars again later this summer. I'm looking forward to doing it, but I've been traveling so much for the book, I just haven't had a chance to be in my office long enough to have webinars again. So they're coming up as well.
Well, it sounds like it's been a whirlwind tour with the book launch. Congratulations on a great book. Thank you so much for coming on the show. There's just tons of actionable things that I know that our listeners can go and do right now to really seek out that clarity, and appreciate your thought leadership on the topic today, Karen.
Thank you so much, Eric. I really enjoyed being on the show and appreciate your questions. They're good ones.
You bet. All right. Have a great rest of the day.
Thank you. You as well.
Well, that was a good one, jam-packed with a lot of personal accountability, right? There was a lot of kind of looking in the mirror and saying, okay, I need to find clarity, right? Ambiguity, bad. Clarity, good. Lots of solid advice and actionable advice from Karen, which I loved. The first step for us is to eliminate the ambiguity, right? Whether it be ourselves, in our marketing team, or in our entire organization. And when we do this, we're able to achieve those strategic goals. There's much less finger pointing, much less workplace conflict. It will give us and empower us to really make better decisions. We can lead more effectively. We can be a better contributor on our marketing team and be a better leader and visionary for our organization. Good stuff. Thanks again for Karen for coming on the show, and thank you for listening. I will catch you next week on another fantastic episode of the Actual Marketing Podcast. We'll see you then.
You've been listening to the Actionable Marketing Podcast from your friends at CoSchedule. For more actionable content, visit CoSchedule.com.